Well, I'm Chris Smith, and the question I have is, where do you live and how does that affect how you get around? Well, I consider myself very fortunate that I live in Northwest Portland, just off Northwest 23rd, which means that I have an incredible number of things within easy walking distance. So I primarily get around walking within the neighborhood, cycling and transit to get around town. And I have the odd circumstance, I think, that some things are just too close to bike. So it's easier to walk and not have to get the bike out and then lock it up somewhere. So it's to me, you know, I think my walk score is 98. So everyone else can be jealous. And you're listening to Open Roads Broadcasting. Is that right? Okay.
Whatever comes out of our heads, okay, will go out to everyone. No pressure.
Everyone.
No pressure.
How many listeners do you have?
Not as many as you would think. Hello and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we simplify the good life. My name is Brock Dittus.
And I'm Steph Routh, broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
Holy shit, Steph, you're here.
I know.
Where's
Hi,
Aaron?
Brock. You tell me. What did you do with him, Brock?
We really don't know. He's on his way out of town for Thanksgiving.
Or so you say.
We'll see him next week. Thank you for filling in.
No, thanks for having me.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Covering bicycling, trains and transit, and simpler living. And today, a new way to digitalize breadcrumbs.
Ooh, I like that.
Thanks.
So the question is, what's the digital bread that the crumbs are coming from?
Well, I think that's a question for our guest.
And is there digital butter? Sub question. Do we need a toaster for this? But yes, breadcrumbs.
I've been told recently that I earned a toaster about a month ago.
You earned a toaster?
That's a different conversation.
Okay. I'll just leave that one where it is. We're here with Brian Blanc. Hello.
Hi.
And Brian was, well, first a cool dude, second a listener, and then third, you met us at the Open Roads Transportation Party thing that we did.
Actually, the 200th episode.
Oh! And yeah. I am a terrible person for remembering. I'm sorry. Thank you. Thank you for following the things that we do here so closely. And now you're here and you're talking
to us. That he remembers and you don't?
Yes. Yes. Well, as you know, I'm a very important person. I can't be bothered to remember. No, I'm not. I am not. Thank you so much for coming in to join us tonight.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're the collator of the digital breadcrumbs.
Yes. Yeah. I've never heard that characterization before.
Well, I thought of it 30 seconds ago. We'll see if it actually proves to be anything other than a very strange non sequitur.
Right. I think it'll be great. You are working on this ore cycle project, so we're going to cover that. And we'll talk a little bit more about your perceptions of Portland, because you came here and you're from somewhere else.
Yeah.
But first of all, Steph, what have you been up to recently?
What have I been up to? Well, we were just talking about, I just came from the protest that was related to the grand jury verdict for Mike Brown.
Oh, yes.
And that was actually, and this morning, it was prefaced by, there's Dr. Adonia Lugo from the League of American Bicyclists, who had the audacity on Twitter to talk about the relationship between placemaking and racial justice, and got slammed by someone who was basically mansplaining to her what racial justice should be. And it should be noted that Adonia Lugo is one of my heroes for racial justice. So so that has been really fascinating. She put just a shout out. She put a really great post today on the news from the League, their blog, called Seeing and Believing in Bike Equity.
Mm.
So
that's a good post.
It's a great post.
Can you email me that link at some point when we're done here?
I would love to email you.
We'll put that up on the website so people can check it out. Yeah, it's been kind of a rocky roller coaster of a day after all this news came out, and you know, the obvious social repercussions and whatnot. So I was up until like 11 o'clock last night, kind of reading Twitter and seeing what various people were saying, and just feeling kind of I don't know, a little bit crushed by the amount of either willful or not willful ignorance. I'd like to believe it's not willful, but there's a lot of people saying a lot of stupid things out there. So it is good. It is good to hear people say smart things and to kind of shine a light towards a better world. Right. So
there's a lot of courage out there to do too,
for sure. So that's what you've been up to.
That's what other people have been doing.
Yes, a lot
and
of people
have
been up to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Brian, you were saying you were downtown earlier, and
yeah, I just ridden by on my way home and stopped for a few minutes to check it out.
Yeah.
Well, I'm over here actually.
Right. Well, man, this will be on your way home.
Yes.
Yeah. We were taping last night, and I think that was when the verdict was brought forward and made public, and we didn't hear about it until later. So, and we were talking about St. Louis, and so I feel like I hope no one thought we were like dancing around an elephant in the room, because that's the sort of thing that we'd like to that's the sort of thing we'd like to address since it's happening.
That's right. What have you been up to?
Well, I went to work last night. We were taping the show that just dropped this morning. If you're hearing this, it's probably going to be a couple days later. But yeah, that's pretty much it. I didn't do very much today. I went home. I ate a can of salmon, and that's pretty much it. I decided to start eating like heart healthy foods. Just because I've never done the health kick before, and so I thought, well,
give it a try.
Yeah, I've got a bunch of other things in line. Maybe I'll try this out and see what happens. So, for the past 5 days now, I think I've eaten like a can of salmon every day, and it's a very fish heavy diet. I'm not sure if that's necessarily good for me or not, but I decided first of all, you know, more proteins, fewer carbs, and see how that works out. And then maybe eventually I'll probably have to round that out with like, you know, a bunch of other real foods. So. But I'm not very good at eating real foods. I never have been. And I don't know how that is.
Define real foods?
Things that are not processed to hell.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mm. You know, like they've spent most of their time not so much as food as like, you know, particles to be reassembled in some factory somewhere. And don't get me wrong. I love a good protein bar every now and again. Sometimes they show up on trains. You know, the freight delivery system in this country is fantastic. You can get anything you want, anytime you want it. Largely because it travels on the rails.
Mm-hmm. No, that's right.
But yeah, I'm a big fan of, you know, like the Lara bar, for example. Really good. And that's like that's a lot closer. It's far less processed than other things. But I've been getting the Rolling Oasis grocery deliveries recently.
Ooh,
because
nice
I happen
plug.
To live close enough to Brandon and in the area that he delivers to. So I'm getting, you know, a fresh bag of groceries every week now. And specifically vegetables and fruits. And like, that's more vegetables and fruits than we've had in the house in a long time. Mm. Adele's really good at that. That's the thing. She is, she's like just conscious of health. It's not like I was raised like with, you know, I wasn't raised by wolves or anything like that, but, I don't even know. Do you think this is a gender thing in any way? Like, is it possible that young men in America are growing up to want to eat Doritos and drink soda and women have a more natural inclination
I'm sure there's
vegetables.
Some research out there on that.
I mean, there's some social factors, yeah. Perhaps, but I just feel like...
Brian,
like,
you're the researcher in the room. Get on that.
I don't know exactly, but I'm sure there is out there.
So suffice to say, that's what I've been doing, is eating a lot of vegetables.
We were talking over the weekend about, you know, the GMO labeling bill, or measure rather, and over the weekend, and it, how fascinating it is that we call it organic food. We call it food and organic food, and why don't we just call it food and inorganic food? Like, why are we going like, oh no, this is actually the good stuff, as opposed to like the default, which is crap?
Why is the onus on the real?
Well, that's exactly right.
Yeah,
to define
people like
itself.
Positive stuff.
Positive phrasing.
As above the baseline of the basement.
Right. Exactly. Although those yams. You keep those in a root cellar, right?
I mean...
Maybe.
Yams.
Depends how you feel about it. So, yeah. So that's a short wrap-up. That's what we've been thinking about and doing recently. So, Brian, let's talk first about where you came from. You are an East Coaster, correct?
Yeah. So I'm from Naugatuck, Connecticut, which is southwestern Connecticut. Kind of
Naugatuck.
Near, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you got it right. Near New Haven, Connecticut.
Okay.
Which is where Yale... And I'm trying to think of other landmarks.
Good pizza there.
Yeah. Good pizza and good burgers.
Yeah.
Pretty churches.
Oh, yeah. Lots of pretty churches and lots of architecture there.
Yeah. I've been to Providence. I've never been to Connecticut on the ground.
Oh, okay.
Other than perhaps like a road. What do they call those? Like a rest area with like restaurants
stops,
and things and bathrooms and whatnot.
Yeah.
They're like, I haven't been there on the ground. It's like, was there a hot air balloon? Like, did you?
I was in a motor vehicle.
Okay. I've been to Colorado several times, but only to the Denver airport.
So for yourself personally, like if you're, there's that states map that's been going around the Facebook recently.
Yes.
Would you choose places that you've only been to an airport and say you've been to that state?
No, because the airports are pretty like, I don't know. It's like, can be like anywhere USA. Like,
right.
Airports have all the same food.
Except for the Portland airport.
Yeah, Portland airport's my favorite.
It's actually done a pretty good job recently of, like, most of the businesses there are local. Yeah. Not all, but most, which is kind of cool.
I don't know. Las Vegas, the only place I've ever been to Las Vegas is the airport. And I think that I've gotten a pretty good cross-section of what Las Vegas is from the airport.
Like, that's really all you need.
I got the slot machines. I think this is as close as I want to get.
That makes sense to me. Yeah. So you're from Connecticut. And when did you decide to come to Oregon?
So I decided my senior year of undergraduate college. So that would be 2013. And I just wanted to move out here to learn about bicycle transportation.
There we go.
Well, how are you getting around in Connecticut?
I was getting around my campus by bike, but for the most part, I was driving.
Okay.
It was pretty much only option.
Is that how did you get to school?
Well, I lived on campus.
I'm sorry, as elementary school, like when you were a kid.
Oh, I walked. In my hometown, I lived less than a mile away from elementary, middle, and high school, so it was totally walkable.
Nice.
Yeah, and they don't even send the bus out to kids that are like less than a mile away.
Right.
So,
which is a good policy. I think that's how it works here too.
Yeah.
You might as well like just come
as
on.
Long as there's sidewalks. The newer parts of town don't have sidewalks, so there's actually like places that are really close to the school, but they don't have sidewalks. So they're not going to make the kids walk.
That's an interesting flop because usually you think of like cities where the oldest parts of town don't have sidewalks. Because like the streets are falling apart or something like that. But the newest ones are being constructed without walkways?
Yeah. Oh, well, in a lot of places.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a scary world.
Yeah.
Yeah. So hence, you were like, I need to be educated about this.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I really didn't even think about it growing up. It wasn't until I knew I wanted to build stuff as a profession. So went to undergrad for civil engineering and I took a class about transportation, and that's where I first started kind of questioning my assumptions about, you know, how transportation is in modern day world.
Do you remember the first like ping in your brain of something that was different than the norm? Something that like the first big question, maybe the first general assumption that seemed shaky to you?
You know, I had a professor who was, he's a board member for the Congress for the New Urbanism, and so that was kind of like an undertone to the entire class, was trying to like introduce the students to the new urbanism, so trying to revive some of the old ideas like grid street networks instead of cul-de-sacs. You know, those were kind of the first things I thought about. I had never thought about what's, you know, the benefit of having a grid versus having a network of cul-de-sacs and highways.
And how did that impact your colleague students? I mean, obviously it impacted you enough to want to study it.
Some people were, you know, interested but kind of ambivalent, like, oh, this is, you know, interesting, but not like where I want to, you know, steer my profession. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Were there any others that were like, yeah, this
there
is
were
the
definitely
thing.
There were definitely some who were like, you know, I just want to learn unbiased view of transportation. What does that even mean? I'm not really sure, but like there were people who really complained about the professor because he was pushing all this bike stuff and transit
like,
stuff.
Let's get back to highways.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. We didn't spend enough time on highway design. So.
he must have been part of the all-powerful lobby.
Yeah, the all-powerful secret bicycle lobby.
Yes.
Not so secret anymore. But.
The ones that are pushing their agenda on everyone.
Yeah. Well, now that they have temporary tattoos, you know, it's all over.
Where do you get one of those, by the way?
Yeah.
Oh, well, the last time I actually still have an all-powerful walking lobby that it was from Pro Walk, Pro Bike, Pro Place this year.
Okay.
And they actually had temp tattoos.
Was it
like,
Pittsburgh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Just last fall?
It was a couple months ago, September.
Oh, yeah. This fall. Okay, mm-hmm. Gotcha. Feels like last fall already. Okay, excellent. We'll talk later.
Hey, let's do.
Sounds like a plan. Yeah, so wait, people saw this as a bias. Like someone's talking about bike infrastructure and bikes as a viable option, and people are saying, no, that's bullshit.
Yeah, I think part of it is because it's such like a, you know, there's no place in Connecticut where you can really, well, you know, recently it's been more so, but like when I was taking this class a couple years ago, you can't go and see bike infrastructure.
Sure.
So like bike infrastructure is a trail that people go and ride on the weekends, not like something that people use to get to practical destinations. And so I think, you know, people were like, oh, this is just like some boondoggle. Like, why are we learning about this stuff? We should be learning about something practical.
It's like, oh, isn't this quaint?
Yeah.
It kind of like the new urbanism is quaint.
Yeah.
And yet it seems like it's the thing that people want, right? Like people are really excited about blocks instead of cul-de-sacs these days.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, real estate developers have caught on to that recently. I don't think they're building places without sidewalks anymore, at least not, you know, north. In the northern United States. I'm not sure about the southern United States.
It depends, yes. The southwestern where it's mostly cactus and all that. Yeah.
Although it's the same here. I mean, in Portland, my old boss, my board president called it, you know, the Portland donut because you can see the sidewalk infill. Sorry, I'm just going to nerd out for
please
a second.
Please do.
Okay, but,
this is your area of expertise.
Well, I know. Well, I mean, expertise, air quotes, but in the region that there's the, you know, internal area, downtown and inner southeast, inner north, that have sidewalks. And then you have the area like, you know, what, 60s and 70s with more lax developing. And so those are without sidewalks. And that's like, you know, gateway area, you know, that are historic unincorporated areas of Portland. And then, you know, outside with the very newer developments just in the last 15 years that have these incredibly wide, like 4 to 5 lane roads that just bisect these communities, but at least, you know, the 224.
But they have awesome sidewalks.
They have awesome sidewalks. No one uses them because there's no there, but, you know, that they exist. And so you see on the sidewalk infill, you see, you know, black where the sidewalks are infilled, and then you have the pink, and there's just this amazing pink donut.
Ooh. Hmm. So, yeah, it's like a voodoo donut then.
Yes, that's right.
Did you have the Pepto-Bismol donut before it went away?
With the bubble gum?
Was that what it was?
In the middle time? It was a pink donut, and then there was like double bubble in
okay.
the middle.
Okay, yeah.
I've had that one before.
You have?
Yeah.
No, okay.
Not the Pepto-Bismol one.
Well, there were a number of recipes they had that involved various pharmaceuticals that I think when they became famous enough for the world to take notice, they were all shut down.
Like those out, yeah.
Suddenly I'm fascinated for July.
Yes, the NyQuil glaze, that was another one that...
Oh, I was going to go for, you know, 91. The pot.
Right.
Yeah.
I was going to just have a resurgence.
A whole different industry. Yep. So there's a pot donut around
on
Portland
future,
of sidewalks.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's precise. At some point, there's going to be a nice green herb of walkability sprinkled all over everything. Okay. Excellent.
So you came out here...
Yes. Yeah, I've been out here.
Which part of town do you live in?
So I live in Sellwood right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's a fair distance from downtown.
Yeah, but
by
it's totally easy because of the investment in the spring water that they did, you know.
Right.
It's just like makes it so mindless to commute on a bike.
So you're not crossing the Sellwood Bridge every day on your commute then?
Oh, no. I've done it a few times when I had to, but... Yeah, I prefer not to.
And for anybody who doesn't live in Portland, the Sellwood Bridge is under intense construction and reconstruction right now. And it's always been a terrible place to ride your bike, but it's someday going to be better. But right now, it's probably about the worst just because none of the construction is done. So,
yeah, and it's occasionally just closed completely.
Right.
Yeah.
So you come up the east side of the river on this beautiful multi-use path, part of which slid in last year. But
yeah,
I think they rebuilt it.
They're done with that now.
It's all set.
Yeah.
It's all safe.
It used to bother me because I had to, they blocked it from like 9 to 3. And sometimes I'd come into town late and have to take Milwaukee instead of Springwater. Yeah.
Not only did you miss your coffee, you also missed your commute.
Yep.
Yeah. That's rough. Well, I'm glad that's taken care of. And pretty soon that new bridge is going to be open for traffic as well. So
yeah. Next September.
Yeah. Tillicum, which is famously a pedestrian and transit and bicycling bridge. No private vehicles allowed.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, the lobby is strong.
I mean, yeah, you have a highway bridge on either side, so.
That's true. That is true.
Everyone should be all right.
Yeah.
And yet the uproar.
Yeah.
So how long does it take you to get to PSU from where you live?
About 25 minutes.
That's not too bad. Yeah.
Doesn't bother me, yeah.
And what's the experience as a student at PSU? It's famously a kind of a new urban university. As opposed to, it's not a campus kind of removed from everything out in the hinterlands.
It's weird because you can, that's what I went to undergrad at University of Connecticut, which is, it's totally that quintessential like
Ivy League.
Yeah, well, it's just a university that's it's in a farm town, and like the town is basically like the university.
It's what
like,
they do there.
Yeah, and
it's their industry.
Yes,
you're probably like 15, 20 minutes from like the closest. Like, I guess what you consider a small city.
Okay. So like all the services are self-contained and
everything's provided by the university, basically. Yeah.
No strangers wandering through campus.
No.
Yeah.
It's like,
everyone's either like old and professorial or young and beautiful or something like that. No in between.
Yeah, definitely a big stratification there.
So you're at this downtown Portland University now, and I was going to ask you, have you used their bicycle shop? Because they
the PSU Bike Hub, I signed up for it probably within the first week I got here, and it's great. I don't understand why there's not more bicycle co-op opportunities around, because I think it's a great system. If you don't want to own all the tools and the stands and all that stuff, and you can just go there and work on your bike, and they'll teach you how to work on your bike. And
it's like an education.
Yeah.
So what have you learned?
How to change my chain. Didn't know how to do that.
Oh, nice.
You learned about the Master Link.
Yes.
That thing is amazing, right?
Yeah.
Holds the whole thing together.
Yeah, learn how to
just
find
like
the Master Link.
In the Big Lebowski.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, I had known some like elementary bike maintenance stuff, like changing tires and greasing chains and stuff before, but now I've learned a lot more since going there.
Excellent. Yeah. What's the most challenging thing you've done at the PSU Bike Hub?
Probably, let's see, changing my crank.
Okay.
Yeah. That was kind of challenging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Was it challenging because you didn't know how to do it, or because it was so integral to the bike, or?
Challenging because I didn't really know how to do it. And, I guess people who don't want to learn how to fix a bike would be better off going somewhere else, because they kind of, they're only going to help you a little bit. And so the first time I put the crank on, I thought it was good, and then I left the shop, and it was like something is loose,
Oh, okay.
And
it's kind of like
it was like rocking
around.
Back and forth. And so then I went back and got it fixed.
There we go.
Yeah, it was kind of iterative process getting the crank to work.
So a couple different tries, and then you got it attached securely.
Yeah, attached nice and tight. I didn't realize how tight I had to get it.
Ah. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
You're already way ahead of me, honestly. These are things that I could probably try to do, but like I never trust myself.
Yeah.
Do you trust yourself?
To a certain degree. There's certain things that are just too complicated for me. Like, I don't know. Like that guy who was in here a second ago. If I had bent my fork, I wouldn't try to replace my fork. I wouldn't try to bend my fork back.
That's right, yeah. Oh, we haven't had Delaney on yet.
Yeah.
I got to have him on. I don't think our audience knows who he is unless they know us personally.
I have a feeling, though, Delaney knows everyone.
He does. He's kind of like the center of the universe. He's a locus.
And I met him on the side of the road on Highway 6. I was
really?
Where did you come from? And thank you, and let's hug.
That's a long ways from here.
It.
But that's kind of his style.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So people will introduce you to him some other day. Yeah. So you're at PSU, and you're working on this Oar Cycle app and project. So tell us a little bit about that.
A principal investigator in the project is Miguel Filiozzi, a professor at PSU, and the funding for the project is from the Oregon Department of Transportation.
Okay.
And so the project was basically kind of looking at how feasible is it to use a smartphone app to collect data about bicyclists.
Right.
And so this is something that's been done before. The first one was Cycle Tracks in San Francisco, and that's had a few other projects that have built on that, and we actually built upon, because all the code has been open source, we built upon the most recent version of that.
Okay. And we're familiar with like apps like Map My Ride or Strava or what have you. There are many ways to track which direction you've gone. And
the thing is, those are kind of geared towards recreational users.
Okay.
And also they're all proprietary. Right. And so
ODOT had a flirtation with Strava, though.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure. I'm sure there's kind of, tight wraps on what exactly is they're doing with that, but I think in general...
But if you were to unwrap...
In general, they're probably trying to kind of look at it from both sides. Is it more effective to buy data from somebody who has such a wide user base already, or to have our own app?
Mm.
And, they can have greater control over their own app, but, they'd have to hire programmers and stuff.
And is the object of your affection playing hard to get? That's the other part.
Yeah.
The flirtation is tricky.
Yeah. And, you know, you're in any of these things, there's a, you know, huge bias, and you need to be, you know, you need to know a way to measure that bias, you know, to kind of account for any people that aren't being covered by the data that is contained within, you know, either Strava or Cycle or any kind of other data collection.
Mm-hmm. So are you saying we can make some generalizations about the people that use these various products?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. I mean, I can.
I won't ask you to tell us what those are, but.
I will.
Yeah? All right, go ahead, Steph.
All right.
Could you tell us what those are?
I mean, in general, I mean, part of the issue is, you know, not just bicycling, but, you know, there's bicycling, and then there's the fact that we're in Portland, and then there's the fact that it's a smartphone app. So definitely kind of geared toward or biased towards white males, high income.
How do you know that?
Well, just kind of a lot of different surveys that have been done with using these apps before, and then kind of getting some of the preliminary data from our app too, looking at kind of what the user base is. I mean, also, we're in the first month of our app, and there's also the fact that we're releasing it at not a great time for bicycling. You know, this is not optimal time of year to be riding a bike. So
it was 62 degrees today when I came into the studio.
I mean, today was pretty nice, but last
comparatively
week, not so nice.
yeah.
And yours is OrCycle is, correct me if I'm wrong, anonymized in some way?
Yes. Yeah. So we don't know the names of the users or anything like that, anything more than they want to share with us.
Do you know anything about any demographic information?
I've been looking at, like I said, the preliminary kind of you know, user base, because we ask a bunch of demographic questions in the app. And like I said, I think we're at like, you know, 80% male or something like that.
I remember answering the questions when I put the app in today and thinking, I'm not helping widen this base.
Yeah.
So as you download it, you identify yourself with demographics.
Yeah, you don't have to, but, you know,
but it's optional,
it helps us,
right?
You know, assess our bias.
Yeah. No, and if you're neurotic about your apps like I am, then you find it. It's in the user settings?
Yeah. There's just like a little user tab on the right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can answer our, like, I think we have a lot of questions.
Yeah.
What is the manifestation of your neurosis in this?
My neurosis?
Yeah.
Oh, I was just like, well, how do I make this thing do everything it can possibly do? Okay. So, yeah.
Good.
And how did you make everything?
I went to the user tab and I put in all my demographic information.
So it's not like a light box. It's not, you know, an open. It's kind of an opt-in. I haven't used it yet.
As I understand, yes.
Yeah, we throw up like a notification that's like, hey, you want to fill in your user information, please? Okay. But, I mean, we can't require people.
Want to rate us on the App Store? Doesn't look like you've done it yet.
We actually don't have that one.
Yeah, that's good.
We're not as interested in the ratings.
And those are kind of lame anyways.
Yeah, those are annoying.
Yeah. But I was actually, I didn't expect to have to answer whether or not I had a vehicle. And matter of fact,
we're trying to match the data in that we get from the app with like travel surveys, like the Oregon Household Activity Survey.
Okay.
To see kind of what's the difference between our sample and what's the difference, you know, compared to some other travel survey. And they kind of ask those questions. How many vehicles do you have in your household? What's your household income? To, you know, assess, because, you know, different, those are definitely in variables that are sort of associated with different types of travel behavior.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like riding a bike for work or not.
Yeah.
So how does someone use it?
So they can
download it like Brock did, and I haven't
they
yet.
They download it for iOS or Android. And there is just basically two buttons on it. You can start a trip, and that's going to start recording your GPS coordinates and ride to wherever you're riding to. And then you can end the trip after you're done, and we have ask a couple questions about, you know, how comfortable were you with your route?
How much did this route suck?
Yeah, that's, you know, a more politically correct way of saying that.
Uh-huh. I came down MLK today for the first trip that I logged, and I said, yeah, there's a lot of concerns. I don't think people should do this.
Yeah, this sucks. You can put that in the comments.
This is a side note, but like, I remember one time it was a fair few years ago. Ellie Blue and Ellie Talheimer were apparently on the corner of MLK just going, "This is so crazy. Why would anyone, like, who actually rides down this?" And right as they said that, like, I rode down and I was like, "Hey, guys."
Steph, would you describe yourself as one of the fearless ones?
No.
No, okay.
Well.
Maybe.
I describe myself as, like, I need to get there.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get there fast. And so I'm going to get there as fast as I can.
In relative comfort with relative speed, yeah.
Well, and I used to live in New York City, so by commute. So I feel like very little, at least within Portland proper, is it all pales in comparison to...
Yeah, I was just in New York this summer and biked there for the first time.
And it's amazing now.
Yeah, I mean, I had never biked there before. I had visited on foot when I was a kid, but yeah, it's pretty good.
This is another side note. I'm very sorry. This is anecdotal, silly, but I was living there, 8 years BSK before Sadek Khan, and there were, you know, Jeanette Sadek. Okay, I was like,
yeah, I know. I didn't know what BSK was.
Well, I just made it up.
Maybe for
BSK,
our
ASK
for our listeners who might not know, Jeanette Sadek Khan was
Transportation
Commissioner,
former
Transportation Commissioner.
That's correct.
There we go.
Yeah. And now she's doing other amazing things.
She's director of NACTO.
Yes,
I don't know what else she's doing.
Oh, gotcha. She's on the lecture circuit.
Thanks for the context.
Yeah. Thank you.
But she was in at that time,
right? She was like good 8 years out, and so it was all before, and there were no bike lanes
before
and,
time,
right? And I was there again last year, and I'm like, this is amazing. Like, there are bike lanes everywhere. I'm just in Prospect Park. No one's yelling at me. This is awesome.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it, to go a place and watch it develop? Because I've got that with Boston. I've spent like 2 hours in New York, and they were all in transit, and I didn't do anything there. Well, that's not true. I did propose to my wife in New York.
Aww.
Nice. But thank you. Just leaving a little space for that sentimentality.
I did nothing.
The other time I was waiting to transfer from Bolt Bus to Bolt Bus, so that was less exciting. But Boston.
You didn't propose to her like on the platform.
Wouldn't that be a great story? Oh,
I'm sure Bolt Bus would like to use that in one of their
I would imagine. Yeah, exactly. Ride our bus. Find true love. Instead of Bolt for a buck, Bolt for love. So Boston has definitely increased its own bicycling infrastructure as well. And even like in the past couple of years, I think last year I didn't ride around that much, but I noticed as I was walking through town that like there are bike lanes where there didn't used to be bike lanes. And it seems like people are both more educated and more people are using the road on bicycles as opposed to like, you'll pardon my saying college kids, because I'm sure you were a great college kid with a one bike, but in Boston, college kids, they come from wherever and they don't know how to ride a bike in the city, and so like they have these shitty bikes that they abuse, and like you always see them in the winter with like bent wheels and they're locked to light poles and everything, and most of them have like removal tags or whatever, but now like I feel like I see many more people riding decent bikes and riding them well and obeying traffic laws, because it's finally reasonable to do so. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I like to see that happen.
Yeah, I was actually in Boston over the summer for a day or two, too. And, you know, might be biased by where I had ridden in Boston and New York City, but I was definitely preferring New York City over Boston so far.
Okay.
From my experience.
Yeah. New York, are they on a grid? They're more on a grid than Boston.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely part of it, Boston.
Certainly Manhattan.
Very complex street network in Boston.
Boston is goddamn confusing.
Yeah.
Don't go there without a map at all, ever.
Yeah, I mean,
you just don't
Google Maps has made it much, you know, easier. But
yeah,
I can't imagine what it was like 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Seriously. Ridiculous. Well, that was the thing. I was talking to, it was Pete Stidman, who works with... I forget the name of the organization. I want to say it is the Boston Bicyclist Union or something like that. Yeah. But he was saying that apparently a lot of these roads used to be actual cow paths. Like it was just, you know, different settlements, different farms. The cows went from one place to another. And much as the trains do. And so these cow paths would just, you know, like converge at the village green downtown where now the state building is and everything. But the Boston Common. And I never thought about that. But, you know, there is a reason that the street doesn't make sense, the street network in Boston.
Yeah, it developed organically. Manhattan was master planned. So that's why it's a grid.
Right. And I guess the only reason that the grid works for us is because we've grown up with it and we think, square roads, that makes a lot of sense. Whereas...
Nowhere north and south is.
Yeah. exactly.
Yeah.
Whereas if you just need to know, like, you know, where the tea party is that night, then,
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah.
So, let's see. We covered how the app works. You're working on it. What are you hoping for next for the app?
To get more users and then definitely a wider user base. I think we're probably not going to get some of that until the weather gets nicer. So,
what does wider mean to you?
Wider, or maybe broader would be a better word. Just more variance in the demographics that we're collecting. You know, more women, more low-income users, more non-white users.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any strategies, any sort of like ideas as how you might achieve those goals?
As engineers, we're not maybe the greatest at knowing the best promotion strategies, but we're hoping to try to find strategies for promoting among different user groups. Maybe among those who don't read Bike Portland or aren't as into the bike advocacy realm. People who are just kind of casual bike riders.
I'm kind of curious about that because I feel like there's a lot of people in Portland that like bikes and they like bikes a lot. But then there's a lot of people in Portland that ride bikes and they're nowhere nearly connected to, like the social scene, any of the organized rides, any of the fun clubs or racing clubs. Or these are just people that are like, hey, a bike is cheap. I want to ride it.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, their preferences are important too. And we just need to find a way of reaching them.
Right.
Yeah.
The interested but concerned.
Yeah. Or even, the...
Or the hell no, I won't go.
What's the fourth one?
That's a good question. The interested but concerned is the only one that I ever think of. That and fearless. Yeah. But there are two more categories at least.
Yeah, there's enthused and confident, and then there's some fourth.
Oh, enthused and
there's
confident.
Oh, it's no way, no how. That's what it is.
That's it. Okay.
Yeah, so hell no is something. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Where are people using...
So primarily in Portland right now, which is also something we're hoping to change because this is an Oregon app. And so we're trying to reach out to people in Eugene and Corvallis, Bend, and even the rural parts of Oregon.
Mm-hmm. Is there much like Southwest or Outer East?
We've gotten a few in Rogue Valley, like Ashland, Medford area, but definitely not Outer East.
I've been impressed by how much bicycling there is happening in Ashland. And it's, I mean, obviously, the Universal Bicycle Institute, UBI.
Yeah, they have a campus there.
They are there. But I never think of Southern Oregon as being a place, maybe because it's kind of hilly, but I never think of it as being a place where people ride bikes. But there's a lot of stuff going on down there.
Yeah, I've actually never been there, but I recently met
But your app has.
Yeah, I recently met the bicycle and pedestrian coordinator from down there, and... Yeah, she showed me some of the trail networks and stuff they have going on, and it's pretty impressive. Yeah, Jenna Stanky. Yeah, or right, Marmon now, I think. Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Congratulations, Jenna.
Hi, Jenna.
Yeah. So you've been there by extension, kind of.
Mm-hmm. Sort of. Yeah. I still got to make a journey down there.
There we go. That's a hard place to get to without owning a car.
Yeah, I mean, I would have to zip car or something.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
I was going to say get around, but I haven't used get around yet. I have memberships in like all of the car sharing services, which I'm kind of proud of.
I don't have get around yet. I have Car2Go and Zipcar, but
yeah, I think get around is free, and Relay Rides is the other one.
I never heard of that one.
Yeah, that's the one that I'm getting our Thanksgiving car for.
Cool.
Because of Amtrak has, I almost said Amcrap. Which is kind of like, I don't know, like they have blackout dates on their reward points, and we usually travel on the holidays for Thanksgiving and Christmas, which is the only time that we consistently take trains. Yeah, and that's the ones that we can't use our points for. So.
Of course.
More summer travel. No, cool. I love Amtrak. I'm definitely a big fan.
I once, Chris Smith, who's on the planning commission once.
A god among men.
I know. It just blew my mind one time when we were talking about peer-to-peer car sharing, and he mentioned that Portland has more car sharing business models than it does major league teams. And
yeah, who needs major league teams?
Someone should make the major league basketball logo, but they should have like some sort of car sharing theme to it.
Yeah,
I remember there was a band in town back in the day called Bad Dates, and it looked like the NBA logo, except it had like it was like a kind of like a drunk swaying dude with a bottle out to the side or whatever. but it kind of looked like the dribbling basketball player at first.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Amtrak, by the way, this is apropos to nothing, but I was just reading the writing residency that they've done with they've got a series of like 16 authors
writers,
or something like that. Yeah. Writers who just want space to reflect and sit and write and do their thing. And Amtrak has been floating them on trains, like just saying, here, have a free train trip, do some writing. And so they're giving them sleeper cars and all that. And I was just reading, two different accounts this morning of different experiences that people have had. It seems awesome.
And Brock's like, I could write.
I wish they would do, yeah, some sort of residency for podcasters.
The Sprocket Podcast Magazine.
That would be great. except the train sound would never leave us. Like,
at that point, we would not be pretending that there is no train. At that point, it would be very much imbued into the fabric of the thing. No, we should totally do
an Amtrak podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. Get the sleeper car. Go to Seattle. Go to San Francisco.
With your points.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, hey, now there's an idea.
Oh, that's what I did last year. You knew this. Yeah.
Wait, maybe.
Yeah. I spent.
Tell us, Steph.
I paid all of our utilities for 4 years entirely with my Amtrak guest rewards.
Oh, okay.
And then after I resigned from Oregon Walks, Ed and I took a month-long train ride. We went out on the Empire Builder.
Ooh. That's
Portland,
a good one.
Yeah, Portland to New York City, and then we kind of bounced back, you know, Boston and Chicago, and then stayed a couple of days at the Isaac Walton Inn, which is...
That's in Chicago?
It's in Essex, Montana. It's in
Ooh.
Glacier National Park. It's
oh,
the
my.
Only whistle stop on the Empire Builder, and it's a... It was a bunkhouse for railroad workers.
That's pretty cool. And by whistle stop, you mean that that's where people, if you don't make it evident that you want to get on the train, it just blows right past.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And that was
oh,
by
wow.
congressional order. Oh, it's just a fascinating story. Anyway. But, Brian, back to you.
Yes.
Why did you decide to do the Orcycle?
So, I mean, I didn't decide to do it. It was my professor who had applied to do the project mm-hmm. in
But Odette's. You could opt out.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I could do a different project, but I came to grad school, part of the deal was that, to get my grad school paid for, I would work on a research project, and, it also helps me cause I have to eventually write a thesis. And, so he had applied for that project, under ODOT's research program, and, ODOT's hopefully going to use the app after the research project to keep collecting data. And, it's just a great. I'm, kind of happy I fell into the project. I've learned a lot, and it's been, really cool. Mm-hmm. And I hope to see it have some life after. Mm. Yeah.
What would you like to see ODOT use it for?
I think I would like to see they incorporate it into kind of their bicycle infrastructure prioritization. So, where a simple thing that they can look at is where are a lot of people riding that there isn't bike infrastructure or where people have reported that there isn't adequate bike infrastructure. One of the things that I haven't mentioned on this show yet is that besides the trip logging function, there's also a report function. So you can report if you've had a crash event or a near miss, or you're just reporting a general safety issue. Like I reported the other day, even though I'm reporting to myself.
It's good to report to yourself.
Wet leaves over the storm drains.
Oh, yeah.
In the bike lane. Yeah, that's kind of dangerous.
What are other types of problems that people can report?
We've tried to cover the whole gamut, but people can also just write in things that they can report. So pavement issues, cars parked in the bike lane, unsafe crossing. If you think that this crossing isn't good enough the way it is and needs to be improved, it's something. Having kind of that documented feedback is really good in making a case for this infrastructure needs to be improved over spending this money on something else.
Mm. Yeah. So if I was going to encourage Oregon, the state of Oregon, to make better bicycling infrastructure on the state highways, I should probably go out and ride some of those state highways with this app.
Yeah.
And get into
talk
some trouble,
about how horrible
some mischief.
It is.
Yeah. And then be like, we could really use like a separated cycleway here.
Yeah. And that's one of the interesting things is that, you know, ODOT is financing this app, but I think the data is going to be just as useful to, if not more useful, to cities and
right.
metropolitan areas. Because, you know, ODOT manages the state highway system, but they don't necessarily have a lot of say over what happens on City of Portland streets.
Localities cover the rest.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, I mean, I guess that could be if the state's looking for a way to make some money. They do have all this data.
And would these data be available, freely available? That brings up a great point. Would it be freely available to other jurisdictions?
Yeah, it would. I thought you were going to say the public. No, it's not going to be available to the public, but it will be available to other jurisdictions.
You have to have a good reason to get this.
Yeah, so...
Under what circumstances could, you know, an individual get even scrubbed?
You could start your own...
It would have to be in the aggregate, so you couldn't have... Individual
sure.
like trips. You could... Like, we'll probably release some general statistics.
But you could get a scatter plot map.
Yeah, something like that. You know, we're hoping to eventually have some kind of web portal where people can view what's, you know, what's going on, like, especially for the reports, so people can see where reports have been made and, you know, kind of say, oh, you know what, I agree with that. I'm going to report that, too. So that's something we're hoping to do eventually.
Reminds me a little bit of the Bike Fun Finder app that Lance Poehler was working on. And I didn't hear a lot of stories about people using that this last Pedalpalooza. I think this was the last year. This last year was the first time it was available.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like to see that sort of thing being used. Just the idea that, you know, for example, with Pedalpalooza, the issue is we don't know where the ride is. We don't know where our friends are right now because they're going on like 8 different rides and they haven't stopped for lunch and they're not home. And they're not listening to their phones because they're too busy dancing to Prince or something like that.
Right.
So, so we just need like collected data. And if there's like a swarm of, you know, of plot points all moving in a certain direction, that's probably the ride that you want to be on. there's a similarity to that. And, this project that you're working on, the Orcycle is, I mean, obviously we're not using it to find like dance parties or whatever.
Yeah.
But
yeah. We're looking at more negative things.
Right. Right.
Bike Fun is much funner than looking at potholes and stuff.
But this is kind of like a long-term bike fun finder that's saying like, hey, if you want to be where the party is at someday, help us get the data now.
Yeah.
So this is very cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Well, I'm curious. First of all, maybe, was there a website or a web address?
Yeah. So it's kind of long to list out.
Okay. But, we'll put a link on the website. You don't have to remember.
You can
right
just
away.
Google Orcycle ODOT and you'll find it. Yeah.
I think that's what I did.
Yeah.
And the iTunes store and the Google Play?
Yeah.
Android?
Yeah.
Is that where people get things for Android?
Yeah, Google Play.
Okay. I'm woefully under-knowledged in Android things.
I just call them both like the App Store. But.
Right, right. Just go find an app.
Yeah. And is this an open source, open code platform as well? So other states?
Yeah. I have this dream. I'm not sure if it's ever going to come into fruition there, but that we can kind of package this to, so people can use it as a survey tool elsewhere. All the apps that we've built on are open source. And so, yeah, we're keeping it open source in that same spirit. Yeah.
Very good.
Can I tell you my dream?
Yeah.
For yours. And this relates to, and I don't know if this is this, I can bring you both to it, my shared dream.
Okay.
But when we were riding a number of years, Paul and Caroline Zavikovsky for their honeymoon, they went from Portland to Portland. And my friend Bonnie and I, we went from Portland to Glacier on the American Cycling or Adventurous Cycling Association route, the Lewis and Clark Trail. And there were, you know, most of the routes were pretty awesome, but there were some that were very gnarly. And actually, the local routes were better that people knew. Like, we could ask for directions and get a better route. So I would love to see something like the ACA incorporate this as, you know, a ground truthing of some of their current.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be great
routes.
If we just...
Because that's an opt-in, you know, a more recreational, you know.
Yeah, it'd be, you know, awesome if we, you know, instead of all these kind of like little different projects that have been going on, we can kind of all get on the same page and deploy it at like a much wider scale. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that'd be really cool.
Yeah,
that's why I keep saying, like, if Google ever ran for president, I would vote for Google, because
oh yeah, Google has
they kind of know
so
how
much data that yeah. if they, you know, I'm saw fit to share it, I think it could do a lot of great things.
They mostly have their shit together.
Yeah.
The only problem is they're a for-profit corporation, which means
exactly.
that it seems like there are some like problems of divided loyalties, at least.
Yeah. Like one thing, I was doing this as part of the project. I was doing an inventory of GIS, if you know what that is,
geographic information
systems. So I was doing this inventory of where do we know in GIS format where bicycle routes are and bicycle infrastructure. And it's, you know, in some areas of the state, it's better than others. But you look at Google Maps, their bike route map, and it has everything.
Absolutely, like, everything.
Why can't we just have that?
Down to whether it's a separate path or a bike yeah. lane or just like a recommended route.
Yeah.
Yeah. they put a lot of work into that. So,
yeah. I mean, I understand why they don't just give it out for free, but
that is their bread and butter, I guess.
Yeah. But,
we're looking for
awesome.
The breadcrumbs. Yeah. I was curious, just for yourself, maybe with transportation starting and maybe just other life things, like obviously when you're getting your education, you're kind of bound to a simpler lifestyle, that sort of thing. But do you have aspirations for yourself in the future as far as mobility or like simpler living habits or whatever? Like,
well, I hope to be able to live in a place where I can bike commute for the rest of my life.
There we go. So don't leave.
Yeah. So right now, Portland's one of the better places to do that, at least in America. I really love riding my bike everywhere. I was happy to give up my car over the summer.
There you go. Congratulations.
I had it back in Connecticut for sitting in a driveway for a while, but I managed to give it to my little brother.
Oh, nice. There we go. You did a good thing with it then. That's good.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. How did it feel when you got rid of the car? Did you feel lost? I mean, obviously it was just something you wanted to do. It wasn't, you weren't forced to do it.
I think I'm going to feel more lost when I'm going home for Christmas
okay.
in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
And when I get home and don't have a car to get around with, that's probably going to be when I'm going to feel it.
Hey, bro, remember that thing that I gave you? Can I borrow the keys?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there transit infrastructure in your home?
No.
Okay.
There's a bus, but it's...
it's like a once every day bus?
Yeah.
Okay.
Does the Metro North?
So Metro North is great if you want to get to New York City, but for other than that, it's not really useful.
Okay. It's not good for a pizza run.
Yeah.
No. Well, no. I know there's a lot of good pizza.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose, yeah, well, okay. Sorry. It's a long distance pizza run.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I mean, over the summer, actually what I had done was I have a bike at my house. That's what I'm going to use over the winter.
Oh, there we go.
Provided that it doesn't snow a lot.
That does kind of throw a wrench into the gears of things, right? Because I've had a bike in Boston for the past however many years. And I think four years ago I bought it. And then like every other year since, I've had to put significant repairs into it because it's a really shitty old bike.
Yeah.
The bike itself is awesome, but like everything is worn out on it.
Yeah.
So I probably shouldn't have bought it in the first place. I probably should have got something else. But it's that and weather. It's like, you know, the combination of the two is basically I don't get to bike much. So at least you have one that runs. I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah. I had actually, you know, I had when I went home this past summer for a couple weeks, I at first thought about bringing one of my bikes from here because, you know, I wanted to have a bike when I was there. Cause
pack it up.
I didn't have. And then, you know, I just decided I was too lazy and I was just going to buy a cheap used bike when I got back to Connecticut, and then I could leave it there.
Right. Well, no matter which way you do it, airlines will cost about $150 or so. Amtrak freight is less, but still expensive. For that amount, you could probably buy a bike would stay there.
I bought a used bike for like $200.
Uh-huh. If you plan on going back and using it like on a regular basis, that's a much better.
Yeah, I plan on going back like once or twice a year, so
you can afford that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you interested in bicycle touring at all? Do you want to do camping, touring, that sort of thing?
I haven't really gotten into it yet, but That's something I'm hoping to do.
But you will.
Yeah. That, you know, I have two bikes that I want to buy. I want to buy a touring bike, and then I want to buy a cyclocross bike.
I'm
not sure which one I'm going to get first.
Yeah, yeah. Well, cyclocross would be a lot of fun. And you could use that for short touring, I would imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it'd be less easy to use the touring bike for cyclocross, although I've considered it with mine.
Yeah. I'm not sure which is more important to me. I'm kind of leaning towards the touring.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like exploring better than racing.
Right.
Where would you like to go first?
Just around Oregon. I haven't really explored much of Oregon besides the gorge towns.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So Portland, Cascade Locks, Hood River, the Dalles. That's pretty much it.
Have you had the beer in Cascade Locks yet?
Oh, yeah. I have been to
Thunder Island Brewing a couple of times. Those guys are the best.
Mm. Yeah, I had actually first gone there because they're friends with some of the other guys in the graduate program at PSU.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And
Sarah and Dan.
Yeah. Yeah, Sarah had actually done her MERP at PSU.
Mm-hmm. What's a MERP?
It's a Master's in Urban and Regional Planning.
Ooh, yes. Nice.
Yeah. And they have a great spot there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just awesome views and the beer's great. And mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can't think of another place that is basically like they have a beer making facility on municipal grounds, because I think that whole park is it's either the port or the city, or maybe they're the same thing. But, you know, it's all public land, but there's beer there. So
yeah.
I can get behind that.
I was so surprised that they didn't, you know, there wasn't already somebody that had, like, capitalized on that, you know.
Right.
Like, when I went there and I was like, so this is, like, the only brewery in town?
Yeah. I think now there's maybe another one. There's at least there's an ale house, but actually there's not another brewery, I don't think. There's just, yeah.
Which just astounds me. I mean, like, it's such a quaint little town.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just
and
like,
the ale house is specifically patronized by, what, PCT? Through hikers.
Yeah,
right?
It's pretty close to the trail. Yeah, mm-hmm. And I know that's what Thunder Island is aiming at as well. Is mm-hmm. like, hey, this is the intersection of the you know, the cross country hiking and the cross country bicycling. Let's get all these people together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because these people are thirsty.
They are, and they haven't had beer for like days and ages.
Yeah.
And they're going nuts. They need like people and beer. So, well, good luck to that. I hope you find something that works out. If you want to borrow a tent, I've got one.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
oh,
I got a nice little solo that.
Look at that, nice.
Yeah, it's been patched, but. Yeah. Well, cool. Welcome to Portland. Let us be
the
500th person to welcome you to Portland.
Thank you.
So I can't let Orcycle go before and forgive me. My concern about any new app.
Okay.
Especially one that reports back to jurisdictions is that it will replace meaningful community involvement that ODOT or any jurisdiction will say, check. Like, we've sent the call out enough people, you know, and that especially as we're diversifying, as we're becoming a transportation, hopefully a community that really looks to meet the transportation needs of a broader range of communities and more diverse communities as we diversify as a region. My only concern is that we already have community involvement processes that stymie meaningful involvement by especially communities of color and low income communities. And I love the fact, Brian, that you are like, no, we want more communities. And my concern is that if it doesn't happen, that we will still say, well, we tried, and then we'll move on like we always do. And so I just needed to register that for the record.
Steph's being very emphatic with
know,
the
I'm,
shaking of the
I'm
fist
shaking
right
my
now.
Fist right
I'm
now.
Not sure that ODOT really knows what they want to do with it yet. I think they're kind of waiting. We're going to try to summarize some of the results next spring. And, you know, kind of see where they're going to move forward with it from there and whether it's really effective or not, or whether some other means might be more effective or it might just be cheaper to, you know, talk to people rather than having an app. But it's definitely something worthy to give a shot.
No, it's an awesome experiment. And I hate to say, like, it was like, I was talking to Brock about it, and he was like, okay, don't crush his spirit. And I was like, I just have questions.
No, it's definitely a valid concern. I mean, also, like, you know, part of the issue is, you know, these results are also very skewed if you want to apply these results outside of Oregon or Portland, because Portland's also a very kind of like
rarefied
niche
environment.
Yeah, compared to the rest of the country. So, you know, there's also that concern is maybe this sort of tool should be used elsewhere and you'd get different results.
Mm-hmm. So kind of like people talk about diversifying their income streams. We need to diversify the info streams.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, we need to get, you know, and maybe we're not going to get those info streams in Portland. Maybe we'll get them somewhere else.
Right. Yeah.
And in my day job, I work at Nonprofit Technology Network. Yeah. And, you know, a huge question is constantly, like, as we're talking about, as my organization and other social organizations that seek to further social change, we're looking at a digital environment as a means of furthering social change, and yet recognizing that there's a digital divide, and that, you know, with every process and with every means of trying to engage communities, there are inherent biases and there are inherent barriers. And I really appreciate, Brian, that you talking very freely about what some of those barriers that you see are, because that is the work of a good graduate student.
Yeah, they definitely, you know, especially as dry as it is, it's one of the things we talk about constantly in statistics, mm-hmm. is, you know,
bias.
Yeah, right.
That's good to know about for sure. Well, and also what Steph, I think that's a nice way of Steph saying it could have gotten really ugly if she had to drag it out of you. So good job.
Yeah,
good job.
This would have been a long podcast.
You are not going to enjoy this. Well, let's wrap it up here. We thank you again for coming in and sharing. Again, it's OreCycle, and
yes.
If you live in Portland or anywhere in Oregon. Get OreCycle.
You can use it outside of Oregon. We just
that's true.
Use your data.
they'll just time lock your data.
I'm totally taking it to Boston with me. Check it out. And if you don't live in Oregon, talk to your local representatives about what you want in your infrastructure. So
well said, sir.
That's it. Yeah. We've been doing this recently. The go out and do it. It's a call to action.
Oh yeah, we're not on the radio anymore.
Exactly. We can say whatever the fuck we want. Go out, make a difference, people. Let your voice be heard. So, all right. Before we go, though, there was just this.
Like, even though Aaron isn't here, he is.
Exactly. He's left his indelible mark
part
on the
of
show.
Podcast.
Rory from Michigan is in New Zealand. And Rory is actually the guy that made that little six pack down there that we took our beers out of at the beginning of the show.
Awesome. Yeah.
Rory is a good guy, but he's in New Zealand and he's checking out the Museum of Transport and Technology in Auckland tomorrow, which I think is now today, which by the time you hear this is going to be like 4 days ago. Thanks to Brock's love of trains and transit. And I just told him I'm super, super jealous. I wish I was, number one, I wish I was in New Zealand. Number two, I wish I could afford to get back. And number three, because I think I could go there now, but I just couldn't, you know, I'd have to like drop everything and be a hobbit for the rest of my life. So I would love to go and check this out. Anyways, that's that. And then Jim in New York, speaking of New York, he was actually in... the tour to Tucson. So I guess he was in Arizona, but finishes a charity ride he's been training for. And oh, what a ride it was. It was 104 miles this past Saturday, November 22nd. He rode for JDRF Ride to Cure Diabetes, raised $5,000 in 15, and his time was 8 hours and 52 minutes.
Wow.
So that's pretty great. That's a really hefty, that's like a century, you know, plus 4 miles.
Yeah,
so.
Way to go, Jim.
And the cool thing about Jim is that he just started riding his bike not too long ago.
What?
Wow. Yeah, he said that he'd had kind of a messy accident or something back in the day, and it kind of scared him off of it, and he's just started picking it up again.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good
so
for him.
Now he's curing diabetes, and he's not stuck on the subway if the subway gets stuck. So, yeah, good for you, Jim. Well done. All right. Steph, do you want to help me read the closing credits?
I'd love to.
All right, we have no news. There's absolutely no news.
Nothing happened.
Nothing happened. Well, I mean, yeah. down at the bottom of the show notes, I've got the stuff in bold under outro.
That's right.
I'll read the bolded things if you want to read the donor names that
love
are not bolded.
It.
All right. Excellent. Here it comes. Find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send us feedback by email at thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Call us at 503-847-9774. It'd be good to have your voice on the show. Twitter at Sprocket Podcast. Thanks to Ryan J. Lynn for our theme music, Hurt Bird for our headline sounder, Marcus Norman for graphic design. And thanks to our sustaining donors, Logan Smith, Johnny K., Shadowfoot, Katharina Mellumgard,
Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson, Ethan Georgie,
Justin Martin, Eric Iverson, Cameron Lean,
Richard Wazensky, Tim Mooney, Orange and Purple,
Glenn Kubisch, Matt Kelly, Jim Gooden,
Eric Weiss, Doug Cohen Miller, Todd Parker,
Scott McAllister Morgan, Chris Gonzalez, Dan Gebhardt, and Zoe Campagna. And thanks, everybody, for hanging out. We'll see you later on.
Oops.
Go to sleep and brush your teeth. Not in that order. Know what we do.
Yeah.
All right. I think it's gone mostly.
Mm-hmm. This is a short train.
It's not bad. It's the locomotives that's the loudest, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Well, unless you esteem us lowly, and then in that case, more than you.
I esteem you a couple thousand.
Less than that.
Really?
Yeah. But I like it because it's a boutique show. It's it's a niche podcast.
Still hip.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Here comes the theme music. Here comes the other theme music.
You're listening to Open Roads Broadcasting.